Education Initiative and its work to ensure all students have access to a quality STEM education regardless of their zip code.
Stand by for outsources.
Good evening and welcome to Outsources. I'm Janice Bohan of the Outsources Collective, your host for this evening. I'm joined in the studio this evening by Glenda Russell, a frequent contributor to Outsources. Before we get started tonight, we want to invite you to consider this wonderful opportunity. If you think you might be interested in joining the Outsources team as a producer of shows like this one, please email us at outsources@kgnu.org and request application information. We're looking for new members for the Outsources team. Maybe you'd like to be one of them. Again, just email us at outsources@kgnu.org and let us know you're interested. And now for tonight's show. For nearly 2 years, since the 2016 election, we've been doing a series of shows on allies, discussing the importance of allies, what motivates and sustains people's work as allies, and the impacts they have. We focused on a wide range of allies, trying to highlight the underlying connections among these situations, the fact that we're really all in this together, and targeting any group amounts to targeting all groups. Recently, we came upon a real-life ally story, one that captured our interest and our imagination. It's a story about a place called Vertil House. Vertil House is located in Haiti, and it provides wraparound services to young people who were orphaned or abandoned in the various catastrophes that have befallen that island nation in recent years. This is such a great story of allyship, we decided to invite the people involved to share it with us. In the studio with us this evening are Rico and Meredith Changeux, the dreamers behind Vertil House. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
First, tell us a little bit about Vertil House. What inspired you to do this work? How did it get started?
Well, I was got introduced by PBS Rocky Mountain. They wanted me to be an interpreter for them going to Haiti after the earthquake. So right after that happened, so I went with them with PBS, and then I also went with Engineers Without Borders out of CU. So we did, we went out to Haiti and we did a whole assessment. And so by doing that, I did ask them that, wow, I needed to find out where my old child home was because I totally forgot. So I had called a cousin. We met up together. After visiting several places in Haiti, and then we stopped at, our last stop was Carrefour. That was the last stop before we like head back home. And I'm like, hey, can we go by my house real quick and then check it out to see like if there's any damage that happened.
So you grew up in Haiti.
I grew up in Haiti. So when we did that, they said like, wow, everything was solid. Everything was structurally sound. And then by leaving, we all left. And then I didn't think anything of it. And then I started thinking right when I got back, and I was just like, you know what, I want to do more. I want to do more than just like seeing like what happened. But at the same time, I just want to give back a little bit to my community. And I've just seen like the devastation, like the people that was, you know, that didn't have homes, and the kids that didn't have anything.
So your first trip there was just to sort of check out the situation with those groups to do an assessment. And you said that was interesting.
I want to do more.
Yeah,
and then that's where the Vertil House came about. And the Vertil House came about was like, I want to give back to my community. And this was the perfect opportunity for me to actually go back and actually have a reason to go back and give back to them. And then I started with like, you know, three kids.
Let me back you up for just a second. Was Vertil House, was the name of the house where you grew up?
Where I grew up, correct.
How did that name happen? Where did the name come from?
That name came from my mother. My mother, her name was Vertil, first of all. And she passed away when I was 17 years old here in the United States in California. So my mother loved kids. She used to cook, and she used to always feed the neighborhood, all the kids in the neighborhood. She just loved kids. And then we never thought anything of it as growing up. And then I just thought that that would have been very appropriate to take her house, that he had built for her and her kids to actually create this, the Virtual House.
So is this a case of like mother, like son?
Pretty much, pretty much, you know. So, and then now, you know, we have 20 kids that's living there full time.
20 kids?
20 kids that's living there full time. And then we have 6 employees that lives there. And then these kids get 3 meals a day. I pay for their education. And at the same time, they get to learn different type of trade, whether it's computer, learning how to like work with computers, speaking English, and learning how to speak English so that they themselves can help themselves. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And I understand you wanna eventually create a school.
Indeed. So my biggest part is I've been helping these kids for like 10 years now, and I had the fortunate for somebody to actually give me a big sum of money so I can buy the property that I was looking at. So they gave me that money, so I bought the property, and then now what I want to do is go back and target even more kids. I know I have 20 right now, which the capacity of the house could actually take about 40 kids, but I figure, how can I cover more? How can I do more than what I'm doing right now? So opening up a school, then I could definitely coverage at least to about 150 to 200 kids.
Wow. And those would be kids who might not live in the house, but
correct,
would go to the school.
That would be going to the school as well, and including my kids as well, too.
Yeah. Yeah. of whom, I guess it would be, mm-hmm. you have 2. And where is your role in this, Meredith?
Actually, specifically when he talks about the school in Haiti, Haiti doesn't put any of its taxes to education. So everyone, if you want to get an education, you're putting money towards a private school tuition. From what I'm learning, the Haitians truly believe in education, but there's a lot of barriers to people getting something past the 6th grade education. But further than that, the education is rote. The government doesn't monitor it, and there are assessments kids have to pass that are extremely expensive. So I think really changing the game, as someone who's been in education for 21 years, I'm really looking at giving kids an authentic education in Haiti feels like something that we could all get behind. And if our mission is to authentically help these kids get back to their community, what better way than to do it through something really motivating and authentic, like a decent education, and not just rote memorization, working through. So that feels pretty good.
Feels really good. You work in education now.
I am. I'm in Denver Public Schools as an assistant principal.
As an assistant principal. Yeah. So you know whereof you speak.
I hope so.
So you would have, when this school gets built, you would be serving about 150 kids through the school.
Through the school.
About 25 of whom would be living in the home.
Correct.
Living in Virtual House. Will the school be attached to Virtual House?
Not necessarily be attached. It's about like 20 minutes away from the house. But that was like the best because Carrefour, where the Virtual House is very congested with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And then where the school would be, which would be in Léogan, which is like a little bit more in like, not necessarily the countryside, but a little bit more quieter. Mm-hmm. So that's why the school would be like that where it is.
In that location.
Okay, help me to understand this. Mm-hmm. You two are married. You have 2 children. Each of you has a day job.
Yes, we do.
It takes up a lot of time. Uh-huh. They take up a lot of time. You're doing this on your own time and through your own initiative and using some of your own money and raising money when you can. What sustains you? What makes it possible for you to do such important work?
For me is going back to Haiti and seeing like how the kids were after the earthquake, and that drives me every time. And every time that it gets to the point where I feel like I can do no more, it drives me to do more. Mm-hmm. So with that said, the driven comes from like the passion. I'm very passionate about what I do, and I'm very passionate about these kids' well-being in the future, of like how they live and then what they could be in the future. And I don't know what that is, but if I can help them in any way to push them to get to that point, from like point zero to point like, you know, Z, then I'm willing to do that. Mm-hmm. So that drives me all the time, every day. So it's very passionate to me.
Meredith, you didn't grow up in Haiti. You're crossing a couple of borders of race, of nationality. What drives you?
Yeah, thank you. I feel like I have a responsibility. I have a ridiculous privilege as a white woman in Colorado. And I think being a part of not just the vision of Virtual, but kind of creating a sustainability. I feel a responsibility. I think I've got access to people with power and resources, and I don't think you can turn away once you recognize this as a responsibility. Mm-hmm. I think I also want to add that Haiti is a mysterious, beautiful, complicated place with a lot of catastrophes, a lot of human-induced suffering, but it's so magnetic and vibrant, and every time I come back, I've become a stronger person for the resilience that people have reminded me of. And I also want to name that I've never met a Haitian who sees themselves as a victim, only a survivor. Wow. And I feel like I get carried further after interacting with the Haitian community more than I give to them.
So like so many allies we've talked with over these months, you get as much or maybe even more than you feel like you give.
Absolutely.
For sure.
And one of the things that I'm hearing in both of your comments is just that notion that the sense that the people that you work with, the youth that you work with, really have such resilience and such vision on their own. It's not like they need somebody to come in and rescue them. It's somebody to facilitate what they can create. And that's so often true of allyship. You know, the best thing you can do is ask, what can I do to help what you're already doing, rather than, you know, doing something that's really intrusive.
I actually would love to add to that. I think something that makes Vertil so unique is that Rico straddles both cultures.
Yes.
Right? So he knows how to handle a board in Colorado, and he knows how to balance the dynamics and the complicated nuances of the Haitian culture. So to your point, we even changed the mission. It's not what we want the kids to become. It's what they want to become, and we just help them access those dreams.
Nice.
You're absolutely right on
nice.
That.
Nice.
Yeah, because it is. It is a dream for them. And I'm not, like I always say this many times, but I'm not trying to change Haiti. I'm not trying to become this big person that changed, but the kids that we do have, I want to make sure that I give them all the tools that they can become something way better than me, than what I would have, because I grew up in Haiti, and we did grow up very poor. We didn't have much. So the fact that I could go back and give back to these particular kids that are in needs, why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I?
Yeah. It's really interesting, the notion of sort of moving with, walking with these kids as they move towards some future that nobody really knows at this point, but just trying to provide them with whatever resources you have access to. And I'm thinking about, it's really interesting to me, Meredith, you're in education, and so working toward their education and working toward the school is sort of a natural outgrowth of your actual professional life. Rico, you're a dancer and a dance instructor. And many of you listening this evening may know of, or and if you don't, you should find out about it, Rico's studio, which is called Streetside Studios, where he teaches dance of all sorts, hip-hop to salsa to ballroom dancing.
Jazz and ballet. And
jazz,
all that stuff.
Ballet.
Yeah.
Oh, good grief. So all of those are beyond me. So how does your enthusiasm about that kind of expression play out in your work with the kids and with Vertil House in general?
Well, one of the big thing about Haiti is this. No matter what's going on in the world or what's going on with them, like that, you know, earthquake, you know, hurricanes and whatnot, they always have the smiling face. You know, no matter what's going on, they always playing music and they always dancing. I mean, that's what I grew up. I mean, I remember being in my mommy's belly, not remember, but I was like a kicking all the time. So with that said, it's like I came out dancing, it felt like to me. Mm-hmm. But these kids, you know, every time I go back and there's like the music is always on and they're always happy and they're always dancing. So I look at like what I'm doing here compared to like what they're doing there. It's almost similar work. Uh-huh. Yes, it might be in a different culture, but it's similar work. They actually have the same passion that I do. And I see, you know, my, you know, like whatever, like my past through them. And then that's, you know, I don't know if you want to add any more to that.
No, I just think he brings a beauty to the Boulder community the way the Haitians would if they were here.
Yeah. Well, the Haitians are here. At least one
of them
is here.
That's right.
We're going to take a station break in just a second, but I want to, when we come back, I want to ask you to tell us a story about one particular kid, just to give people an idea of who's in this program, who lives at Vertil House, and how and what their stories are like. But first, we need to tell you that in case you just joined us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU. We're talking this evening with Meredith Enrico Changeur about Vertil House, a program in Haiti that provides wraparound services to youth who have been orphaned or abandoned due to the various catastrophes that have struck that country. So, got a story you want to share?
Story, yeah. I mean, I have a couple of stories I can share, but I'm trying to make them quick because I know we're not time. But one of the girls that I got that's been in the house, living in the house for like, I want to say almost 9 years now.
Wow.
Her name is Munchie Love, and she came to us where her mother, I believe, was trapped in the earthquake, and then she pulled herself out. And you seeing this little girl, I mean, I might cry, but let it go. but she was like so warm-hearted and so willing, and then so willing to like make the change in her life with like what just happened with her. And then now she wants to become a dancer. She wants to become a nurse. And I look at her like if something ever happened to me here in Colorado, she would be the person that would be running the Vertil House. That's
really
how passionate that she is about it. And she's very giving. She wants to give back. Like she knows where she came from as like a poor child, and then now she sees what she has, and she understands it. And she's like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life now.
Wow.
So with that said, it's a beautiful thing. You know,
yeah,
we can
really
go on with her, but it's just like that. It's like we're not making a big change, but we're making a huge change, you know?
Yes.
I like that phrase, we're not making a big change, we're making a huge change. It's true. It's
you know, in some twinky little way, but that's what we're doing. And then,
right,
you know, the other person that we had is like this gentleman by his name is Schneider. He is one of the oldest kids that came to us and basically lived in the mountains, never had an education, like never opened a book. And he was like, I think he was like 14 when he came to us. And then he was pretty much working with his uncle that actually owned one of those little, you know, not a boutique, but like he was selling drinks and waters and so forth and so on. So trying to make a living. Then he was always at the house, in front of the house, selling these things. And I was like, what is the story with this kid? And then the more and more, after like a couple of years going back and forth, and then I realized that he didn't have nowhere to go. This is all he knew. He was literally sleeping in the street.
Wow.
And just trying to make a living. And then I was just like, he's here every day though. Like, so, and then more, and we got talking and I was like, you should be a part of this. And then now he is one of our kids that's actually starting to, you know how kids are. They get to the point where they let, you know, they get lazy because it doesn't matter where you go.
Right.
But now he's becoming more of like a leader himself, like cleaning the yard, making sure that the place is clean. So he's himself realizing that, you know what, they've given me a lot, so now I also want to give back as well. So,
amazing.
Yeah. And then there's like so many more stories that I could say.
Sure.
But it's beautiful. I just feel like every time we do what we do, we're making our changes. And then these kids are, you know, they're getting the proper education. It's a beautiful thing.
May I add?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. For Schneider, also, he had no dental, no medical. When he came to us, he had never been to a school. So when you think about the supports, a wraparound services a kid needs at 14, who hasn't interacted with brothers and sisters, he didn't smile, he was embarrassed, he had no self-esteem. So Rico's done a lot of work. We've brought in a full-time counselor. We do trauma support. We even coach the staff. And how do you deal with kids like this? We recognize he's significantly below grade level, so he gets tutoring. He fell in love with soccer there, so we use football or soccer as incentives to kind of inspire him. And Rico's right. I caught him flirting last time.
And he's growing right up.
Yeah, he's pretty pleased with himself.
Uh-huh.
It's just amazing. Really cool.
Well, those are wonderful stories. You do a lot of work. Vertil House is already doing a lot of work, making a huge difference. You have plans for a school. How do you support this project? You said somebody helped at some point.
Somebody helped at some point, but now it's the bigger part. The bigger part is like literally what I tell the people that don't know about what we do is going to our website and then donating. You know, we hold annual galas once a year, and so we through that and then people we get the word as much as we possibly can, so people can actually come and support. And then bid on like really cool stuff that we have.
cool.
But just basically being sharing, sharing, telling our story, my story of like what I'm doing. And then you have to remember 100%, I mean, I have to say 99% of all the proceeds really goes straightly to Haiti. None of us here in the States I get paid for what we do. We're just doing it out of love, out of the love of these kids. So therefore, when you donate, you know that your money, your dollar, literally goes to Haiti and to help these kids.
Now, you mentioned the gala that you have once a year.
Yes.
We have tickets for that gala.
Yes.
The upcoming gala.
We are excited about it, but we also know it's sold out, so we're not shilling for the gala.
Oh, no.
but that's an annual event?
It's an annual event that happens, you know, once a year. And we were, like, very fortunate to selling out, like, literally 4 weeks before the wow. actual date. And it is in November 9th. So hopefully, if the people that didn't make it this time around, they could come back next year and we'll do something bigger. And
meanwhile, they can go on the website. And if
yes.
they just feel inspired to support, the website is www, of course, dot
Vertiel
House. V-E-R-T-I-L-E, Vertiel House.
.org.
Excuse me. Yeah, .org.
You know, we also have a really strong social media force that's come in lately with the support of a woman named Melissa
Rosa
at CrossFit Sanitas.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got a great website. We've got our Facebook page is strong. You can sign up for our newsletters. And we don't inundate, but we do inform and enlighten. And it's always easy to sponsor a kid at any increment each month. So seriously, every single one of those pieces add up to our existence and our yearly budget.
That's really great.
It's pretty remarkable, you know, when I think about it and I think about the cost of doing this kind of work with that many kids and creating a school, and I don't know if the costs are comparable in Haiti, but I'm sure they're not trivial when you're talking about this many kids. And that's a lot of support. There are a lot of folks who, when they hear this story, are like, this is a good project.
It's a fun project, and it's been, you know, like a four-year, you know, reminiscing about it. And then now that I feel like we're at a place where we could actually start to do something about it. So I'm very fortunate to be able to have the support that I've been having, and very fortunate to have, like, the support that the people that don't know who I am, that's coming and be like, hey, I want to be a part of it. How can I? So it's pretty remarkable. So, and thank you for all the support out there that's been supporting me with my cause and my dreams, and then helping these young kids become better, you know, the new future of the next generation.
Yeah,
because that's a part of it I keep hearing from what you're saying too, is that part of your hope is to help them to give back to their community.
Correct.
In the same way.
Correct.
not only to enrich their own lives, by which I don't mean monetarily, but, you know, make their own lives more full, but also to give back to the community, which is, you know, sort of exactly what you're both doing.
It's a really amazing being allies, and it gets passed on, and it gets passed on, and who the heck knows where it all ends?
I mean,
it could go on for generations.
Correct.
And it probably will.
And I hope so.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I hope so.
We're actually, surprisingly, always running out of time. But before we close, we'd like to give you each just a minute to share a thought about something we haven't talked about, something you'd especially like our listening audience to hear, or something we just have missed mentioning as we've talked this evening.
Yeah, you know, to bring it back to your mission and talking about allies, my dad, I know this isn't his quote, but he always says this, the measure of a society is how we take care of its most vulnerable people, right? And I think about being an ally, especially in times like this, it's, you know, you ask Rico, why is he doing this work and how does he do it? And he said it, he doesn't try to change Haiti. He's just influencing a neighborhood. He's influencing a group of people, and hopefully that'll resonate with future generations. And I think it's just taking one step at a time and eliminating excuses and barriers and believing in yourself and the responsibility that you have to take care of people who are less fortunate than we are.
Mm-hmm. Well yeah. said.
Very well yeah. said.
I mean, I feel like she said it perfectly. it's like hard to go with. But the main goal is... giving back for me, literally. I'm very fortunate that I came to the United States and I had a family that actually brought me here for me mm-hmm. to start my career as a dancer and choreographer and then basically having my own business. And then so to be able to live growing up in a place where I had nothing, you know, my family had anything mm-hmm. to like what I have now, and then for me to go back and share my wealth, which is not very much, but back to my community of where I was growing up, that's I'm very fortunate about that, you know. And then it's something that is dear to my heart, and I know that my mother's looking up, you know, looking down on us and looking down on me and being like, wow, you know, here you are doing something that she always did that was very easily for her, and here I am following her footsteps, and I'm very honored by that, and I'm very proud.
And you are. You're feeding the neighborhood children.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about sharing your wealth, it's not just the monetary
stuff. It's not the monetary
stuff. It's like your enthusiasm and your joy in life and your idea that people can become more mm-hmm. by virtue of being inspired. And all of that is wealth to share
exactly.
as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anything else we have... like 2 minutes.
Well, I got a quick plug. You did mention our kiddos.
Oh, yeah, the right? kiddos, yes.
So we do have a third grader and a kindergartner in the Denver Public Schools at Escuela Valdez, and I think as important as it is to transfer this access to resources and wealth in Haiti, it's important for us to be doing that at home and recognizing that our kids have a responsibility. And we take them to Haiti. We hope that they tell the story at school, and we really hope it influences them into being more mindful and more generous and nice. More appreciative.
Yeah. Well, and as a matter of fact, excuse me, in research done on allies, a lot of people who are allies, when asked, how did you learn about this or how did you get started, they say, just like Rico did, I learned it from watching at home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like the same thing too with, I have to say, with the volunteers that I do bring down yeah. to Haiti. You know, like the fact that the Rosa's family, Melissa Rosa, came to Haiti with me and was just like blown away what I was doing
yeah.
with very little. And then she's like, I want to be a part of it. And I think that's very important with like all the other people, like Fred, my uncle Fred, right. or Uncle Fred, right. but my uncle. Like, right. like we bring these people down there and then they see it and then they fell in love with it. And then this is the kind of, that's the kind of group that we are working with, the right. people that are into it.
Yeah. It's so, wonderful.
Yeah.
We
it's
fell in
wonderful.
Love with it too.
Unfortunately, we have to close for this evening. Our thanks to Rico and Meredith Changeux for their time this evening and for their incredible work on behalf of these young people and on behalf of themselves and their children and the world in general. Remember, you can learn more about Vertiel House and about their upcoming but sold out gala by visiting thevertielhouse.org. Thanks also to you, our listening audience, for joining us here this evening. We hope this discussion has given you some food for thought and some idea about how you, too, might act as an ally. And now, instead of our regular announcements of upcoming events, we want to speak to the leaked memo that was reported today in the New York Times about this administration's response to transgender rights.
Nobody says it better than Mara Kiesling, the executive director of the National Center for Transgender Equality. So in the time we have left, I'm just going to quote a few lines from Ms. Kiesling's press release on this topic. The proposal is an attempt to put heartless restraints on the lives of 2 million people, effectively abandoning our right to equal access to health care, to housing, to education, or to fair treatment under the law. The administration is willing to disregard the established medical and legal view of our rights and ourselves to solidify an archaic, dogmatic, and frightening view of the world This transparent political attack will not succeed administratively, legally, or morally. And I'm skipping to transgender people. I know you are frightened. I know you are horrified to see your existence treated in such an inhumane and flippant manner. What this administration is trying to do is an abomination, a reckless attack on your life and mine. And I'm going to go to the end of Mara Kiesling's statement. At the heart of our work at the National Center for Transgender Equality is the belief that no one should have to suffer just to be true to themselves. And yet, transgender people are still often forced from their homes, fired from their jobs, harassed at their schools, and denied the most basic level of dignity by a broken system. Knowing this, millions of transgender people wake up every day and step into an uncertain world. This is the most common trait shared by transgender people, a strength and resilience for the hard and difficult times. If this administration is hoping to demoralize us, they will be disappointed. If they are hoping we will give up, they should reconsider the power of our persistence and our fury. We join with our transgender members of our community in outrage and in resistance. We will work with you, and you'll be hearing more about this very soon on Outsources. Good night.
That was Outsources, and stay tuned for Opera Box. This is KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. This program is made possible by you, the KGNU listener member, and by the Relationship School, presenting its weekend intensive workshop, which covers how to resolve conflict quickly, taking place November 9th to the 11th at the Hilton Garden. This workshop is for singles, partnered individuals, and married couples who are motivated to work through fights, distance, and disagreements. Ticket registration and more information can be found at relationshipschool.net/talk.
Good evening. This is Chris Moore with KGNU's Opera Box, and tonight we're going to play something that has a bit of an operatic quality to it, but certainly is not opera as we understand it. CU Presents is putting on West Side Story, and that's October 26th, 27th, and 28th, so it's coming up this weekend, and I don't know how many tickets are left at Mackey Auditorium, but you may want to go to cupresents.org and see if you can get the tickets for it. This goes back to the 1950s, and it was kind of at a time when there was an operatic quality to some of the great Broadway shows that were coming out, and Leonard Bernstein and his West Side Story is certainly no exception. So it's not surprising that they decided later, Deutsche Grammophon, I think it was about 1990 or so. Actually, no, I'm sorry, 1985. In 1985, Deutsche Grammophon invited Leonard Bernstein to get together with some opera stars and put out a performance. Here we are, the composer himself with one of the greatest conductors of the entire 20th century and some of the greatest singers as well. It did not go well in the recording studio. In fact, Jose Carreras got so upset with Leonard Bernstein and all the yelling that he got and the put-downs and everything that he actually stormed out at one point and refused to sing anymore for a while. But he was somehow coaxed back in by somebody. And so this recording, which, as I said, began with great difficulty, came out. And so I thought that since, even though this is by no means an opera and not what we would normally think of as something you'd hear on Opera Box, I think it's worth playing just because it has enough of an operatic quality that the opera department at CU Boulder here is putting it on. So Leonard Bernstein, the composer, Stephen Sondheim, a young man who at that time was only able to get the lyrics onto the Broadway stage, but that helped make him famous as well. The book by Arthur Lawrence, and the entire production was choreographed by Jerome Robbins. We're going to hear Kiri Takanawa as Maria, Jose Carreras as Tony, Tatiana Troyanos as Anita, Kurt Ullman as Riff, and Marilyn Horn singing Somewhere. These are some of the great opera stars of the 1980s. And let's listen to some of the songs now, or many of the songs, from West Side Story by Leonard Bernstein.